UK Wine Show, show number 69. Phil Glass and Swigert with Mike Rogers. G'day. Welcome to the UK Wine Show, show number 69 for the 21st of September 2007. My name's Chris Scott, and this week we're continuing our look at UK wine retailers. We're talking with Mike Rogers, owner and wine shop operator of Phil Glass and Swigert. With three stores in London's Marylebone, Richmond and Battersea, they're one of the top wine merchants in London. With the market dominated by supermarkets, Mike says to focus on a broader range of wines, and instead of focusing on price, they focus on quality. But before we get into that, let's have the news with our own top quality news reader, Jane Scott.
Thanks, Chris. In the news this week, UK imports of bulk wine are up, and Woolworth's £5 champagne goes down a treat. But first, a vineyard in Chile is getting the blow-dry treatment in a new way to control pests. Chilean winery Casa Silva has been using a machine to blow dry heat at 100 degrees Celsius and 200 kilometres per hour onto the vines. The heat from the Thermal Pest Control Machine, or TPC, causes the grape skins to thicken and provide a better barrier against botrytis and other forms of rot. The winery has seen an increase in the quality of the grape harvest and has eliminated the need for pesticides across most of their vineyards. Meanwhile, here in the UK, British shoppers have cleaned out Woolworths stores of the £5 champagne within a week of it going on sale. It was introduced into 15 out-of-town stores with a ruling that only one bottle per customer could be purchased. At £5, it's less than half the price of the cheapest champagnes currently available at Tesco and Asda, but customers who missed out will have to wait until Christmas when the next shipment is due. And finally, more wine than ever is being imported in bulk and then bottled in the UK, with imports up 54% between July 06 and June 2007. Last year, the Glassright Wine Programme was launched to encourage the trade to import wine in bulk instead of bottles, and then bottle in lighter glass manufactured in the UK. The effect is a reduction in the amount of green glass entering our recycling systems, and an increase in the domestic market for recycled glass. The lighter weight bottles also use less raw material and are better for the environment. That's all the news this week, but 10 years ago, in September 1997, South Africa's wine cooperative, KWV, became a private company. KWV was privatised on the condition that it set up a non-profit-making wine industry trust through which the wine industry in South Africa could regulate and fund itself. Don't forget you can get more detail on these news stories on the news homepage of our website, 3050.co.uk. That's it from me. Back over to you, Chris.
Cheers, Jane. I'm not convinced about the blower. Heating air up to 100 degrees and then blowing it all over grapes, I don't know if it's a good use of energy. I dread to think what the CO2 emissions are like if any huge players took this on. That said, I wonder what energy is required to produce the pesticides that they're replacing it with. Thicker skins usually mean more tannins and colour as well, and possibly even extra flavours. So who knows? Maybe it's not too environmentally unsound, and it may just work. On the Woolies story, releasing a £5 champagne, it's no wonder they sold out irrespective of the quality, which I have no idea about. It was sold out before I could get any. But to release a wine and have it sell out within a week, and then not have any plans for more, smells a lot like a loss leader to me to get the punters in the door and flog them some other product there. If champagne can be produced at £5 a bottle and to a reasonable quality, then there should be no problems with restocking the shelves. To wait at least quarter of a year between shipments is baloney. This was a cynical approach to get a free bit of advertising through the wine media, and I wonder how many cases they actually brought into the country. Shame on you, Woolies, for pulling the wool over our eyes. Bulk wine importing into the UK is a good thing, I think. Not only does it reduce the shipping costs, it also helps the UK get through a mountain of green glass no one wants. Let's face it, all those nice green bottles that we put into our recycling bins are most likely to go into landfill or produce loads of CO2 as they're being trucked overseas for recycling. The UK has very little use for green bottles, We simply don't use them. The only real use is bringing in bulk wine in huge bladders and filling it here. It does two things. Reduces the amount of green glass arriving here. And second, uses up some of the unwanted green glass that has already arrived here from all those wine bottles being brought into the country. Next up, we have the interview with Mike Rogers from Fill Glass and Swigert. Hi, I'm here with Mike Rogers. He's the owner and manager of Fill Glass and Swigert. How are you, Mike?
I'm fine, thank you very much, Chris.
How did you come up with the name Fill Glass and Swigert? Is there a Phil working here?
16 years ago when we started, the wine industry was inhabited by a certain kind of wine merchant, what we sometimes call Sir Lunch-a-Lot type of people, who were, I think, to a lot of people, quite intimidating, very old-fashioned, fairly snooty people. And we wanted to come up with a name that reflected our kind of approach to selling wine. So we came up with a name that was a play on words that superficially looked like a member of that kind of group of people, but when you look a bit closer at it, you realize it's a joke, and it's a kind of joke that's haunted us over those 16 years. People either immediately get it or they don't get it at all.
You guys are a leading independent. You've won the International Wine Competition's London Wine Merchant of the Year for what, 06, 05, 04 and 03. That's under true. Various headings. What is your philosophy?
As an independent, of course, you have to create a reason for people to come to you. And so we have always tried to be more friendly. We've always tried to be more helpful. We've always tried to be more down-to-earth than the traditional old-school wine merchants. But the market is dominated nowadays by the supermarkets and by the big multiple chains. So we've also tried to be different to them. And in trying to be different to them, we have we've focused on a much broader range of wines. And rather than focusing slavishly on price points, the 499s, the 599s, the 699s, we focused on quality as our prime concern, so that if people come to us, they know they're coming to us because they're going to get something really, really good. So we focused on quality and also on interest. You know, we dare to be adventurous and offer people wines that they won't find in the safe, fairly middle of the road ranges offered by the multiples.
I suppose one of the advantages with you guys is because you can take smaller lots. You know, if you want to stock a wine in Tesco's, they're going to need a container just to put the stuff on the shelf.
Exactly. And as time goes by, we're finding generally that small wine producers are getting better at what they do. The world is getting smaller. People are talking to one another more. And the quality of winemaking amongst the small winemaking fraternity is better than ever before, and they're getting more ambitious, and that means that the small wine producers want to have their wines exported to different countries. London is a fairly significant export destination for wines from around Europe and indeed more and more from the New World now. So these small guys need outlets for their wines just because they want to have the thrill of seeing their wines going abroad, and of course they can't go to Tesco if they only make 100 cases or 200 cases. So happily for us, they tend to want to work with a small independence, and that's where we come in.
You don't import a lot of wine yourself?
Well, we in volume terms we import a fair amount in relationship to our size. But in proportion to our overall range, the amount we import is fairly small.
What's that?
Because our ambition is to offer people the best from everywhere. And most of the world's best wine producers are firmly on the world stage already. They already have agreements and mostly exclusive agreements with importers and distributors in each of the major markets. So if we want to have the top wines, it means that we're kind of forced to buying them from the the appointed importer of that producer.
I suppose that gives you the advantage also. If a vintage is rubbish one year, you're not really stuck with it.
Exactly.
And so you can change.
Exactly. That's a very important point. One of the benefits of being an independent is that you can be actively promiscuous without ruining your relationships. So, you know, our relationship in most cases is with the importer, not with the producer. So if we don't like a vintage, or if a vintage is not as good as we would like it to be, we can simply skip that and go to another producer, or indeed leave that vintage out altogether from a particular region. And that kind of also reflects what we offer to the market. We offer safe, reliable, top quality wines, and so we're not committed to having to take the same wine year in, year out from any one producer.
You've got three stores now, all based in London. You've got one in Marylebone here, where we were doing the podcast. You've got one in Richmond, which I've bought a couple of bottles in the past from. And you've
Thank
got
you.
One in Battersea as right. well. How right. did you guys roll out your stores? Did you just start with a vision of having three stores, or is this a work in progress?
Well, we started out with basically no preconceived idea of how big we would become, except that we loved wine. We were from a My wife and I are joint partners in the business. We were from a business background ourselves, and we thought, well, we'll set up our company and we'll do something that we enjoy. And happily, we both enjoyed wine. We set out to do what we thought was possible, but we never really set out with a firm ambition to grow to a certain size. It happened actually that shortly after we opened our first shop, there wasn't really room in the company for the two of us, so I went off and did something else within the wine industry, and only came back in about 2001. And shortly after that, we opened our second shop, and then that went fairly well. So we were foolish enough to think we could open a third, and lo and behold, that's doing pretty well too. So, you know, growth tends to promote growth. So long as it works as you expect it to.
Do you have many employees?
We have, on and off at any one time, about eight different employees, both full-time and part-time.
And what sort of skill sets? Because as an independent, you obviously need people who can converse with your clients.
Yes, yes. I mean, we're very careful about who works with us. We employ people who primarily are very friendly. I think it's important in the retail business that you build a rapport with your customers. The best product in the world isn't going to make a business successful if your customers don't come to you. So you've got to create an environment in which your customers are happy. And so we primarily look for people who are instinctively friendly, instinctively helpful. And of course, we do require them to know a bit about wine. But of course, this is an environment where if you're in wine 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, there's plenty of scope for you to learn as well. So there's lots of opportunity for people to learn whilst they're working. But, you know, primarily we want people to be friendly and intelligent and can-do and helpful kind of people.
Do you send them off to much training? Like, do they do WSET courses or trade tastings?
We don't tend to put too much emphasis on WSET, the Wines and Spirits Education Trust, but certainly we encourage people to learn as much as they can, to read around the subject, to go to visit wineries and wine regions. We have sponsored our staff to go on wine tours to various different countries, and of course we will, wherever we can, we would send them to wine tastings, trade tastings and generic tastings, that kind of thing.
Getting down to your customers, what would you say would be your typical customer?
It's difficult to be absolutely specific, but generally our customers are between 20 and 40. Of course there are exceptions, but the average customer would be about 35, male or female, fairly well-traveled people, into food and into wine. People come to us because they've actively chosen to do so. We're not a convenience store. I often jokingly tell our customers we're an inconvenience store.
I notice you don't sell any cigarettes, or none that I can see, which is one of the big turnovers for a lot of high street
exactly,
wine shops.
Exactly. We don't want customers to come to us simply because we're on their doorstep. We want them to come to us because we have what they want. So we jokingly say we're an inconvenience store, but we have an active, although unspoken, policy of not offering all those little convenient accessories that people might want to have. We're about wine. We dare to be a wine specialist, and the experience has proved that's the right way for us to conduct our business, and the only way really where we can compete.
You mentioned earlier, before we recorded the show, that you're saying the guys that come along, those 35-year-old average customers, they like to browse, whereas the women seem to be more focused on objectives, which seems a bit strange to me. What's going on there?
Yes, it's an interesting observation that most of the women who shop with us tends to come in with a fairly firm idea of what they want to go home with, not necessarily specifically the bottle of wine, but they tend to come in for a purpose rather than just to browse. We tend to find that men are much more inclined to come in and browse first. Of course, men are more likely to be tempted than women, and I think they it's a rare occasion when they leave without something, but generally a woman will come into the shop expecting to achieve a particular goal, whether it's to buy somebody a present or whether it's to buy something for a dinner party. They know what they want, and then they will go home with that.
Do you think those women that are coming in here, they're quite focused on the wine? Do you see them drinking a lot of rosé? There's been a huge uplift in rosés, particularly from California. Is that what you guys see as a sort of more high-end independent?
We're selling massively more rosé than we were, say, 5 years ago. It doesn't tend to be Californian. In fact, it's quite specific. We sell lots of very dry, crisp, lighter-style rosés from the south of France. We do sell rosés from places like Australia and from Spain, but in the main, we find that people are preferring very light, elegant style rosés and bone dry.
Yeah. What about the U.S.? There's been a big increase in U.S. wines. They say that the U.S. is due to overtake France as the number two supplier to the U.K. now. Do you see any change in the U.S. consumption?
Yeah, that's interesting. We have always sold a reasonable amount of U.S. wine, but right at the top end. The statistic about the U.S. overtaking France, I think, probably refers to the bottom end of the market, the volume end, with things like Blossom Hill and Sutter Home and things like that, Kendall Jackson. That's not an area where we operate ourselves.
What is the average price of your wines? You know, do you have £3 bottles of wine in store?
No, we don't. We're not snobbish about wine. We're not elitist, but we are pragmatic about it. And that means that we don't see ourselves competing with the supermarkets. We don't have the muscle power to compete. So we leave them to dominate the market up to about £6 or £7. Our range starts at £6 and goes up from there, and the average price of a bottle we sell is around about £15.
Quite pricey, though.
Well, so long as you get what you pay for, then I think we've kind of proved that over the years, that people are happy to pay £15. Of course, we're not appealing to everybody. Yep. We appeal to a very, very small sector of the market, I have to say, statistically speaking. But it's a significant part of the market, and the people who spend £15 with us come back again and again and again, and generally they're happy with what they buy.
You can see where you're based: Marylebone, Battersea, Richmond. They're all quite, you know, well-to-do areas.
Absolutely.
Do you see yourself rolling out in any other areas, or do you, can you?
Yes, indeed. We we feel we've got the potential to open a number of additional stores in different parts of London. We would focus on London purely because it enables us to have better control over what we do. There are any number of places in London where we feasibly could open a new store. Clearly, those areas are selected on the basis of who lives in the area. And you don't open a Rolls-Royce showroom in an area where people can't afford a Rolls-Royce. Yeah. In the same way, it may be an unfair analogy or an unrealistic analogy, but we would look to open a store in an area where we feel that there is a high density of premium wine drinkers, and that tends to be the better off areas.
All right then. Just a couple of last things. What are your top three or four countries that you guys sell wine for?
In volume terms, it would be France firmly still at number one. We're regarded as something of a specialist in Australian and New Zealand wines. I think Australia would be number two, but maybe the big surprise would be number three, which is Italy. We sell significant quantities of Italian wines and are very active in promoting Italian wine because it's so good and it's so diverse and so interesting.
Normally people think of Italy as being really big in the on-trade rather than the off-trade.
I think it is, and without wanting to denigrate our restaurant cousins, I think actually a lot of the Italian restaurants have acted as negative ambassadors for their wines. We all know the scenario where we go into a restaurant and the wine list just says Chianti or Valpolicella or Pinot Grigio. It doesn't tell you the name of the producer or the vintage. In many cases, we've had to overcome the negative image of Italian wines that's resulted from that policy. So sometimes we have to push very hard to get people to buy a relatively expensive Italian wine from us. But we do it in the knowledge that they will fall in love and they'll come back and they'll buy more.
I noticed also, just having a look around your store earlier, you had quite a decent-sized range of German wines.
Yes, that's another area where it fits in with our philosophy of offering people things that are not obvious. It also very firmly ticks the box of quality and style. And also
probably good value for money as well.
And value for money, and you could say the same about Portugal. You know, these countries are making fantastic wines, but simply because people don't know them and are not prepared to try them unprompted, the laws of supply and demand, if people don't want it, then they can't charge high prices. So some of the best bargains come from Germany and come from places like Portugal as well.
Do you think that's one of your key things, is that you can show people these new wines because you are holding their hand when they're in the store?
I think so. We regard our customers as people with whom we have a long-term relationship, or we want to have a long-term relationship, and that is founded on trust. And it works two ways. It means that we can sell people wines that they wouldn't choose themselves otherwise. It also means that they rely on us to give them wines that are very good. And that's the kick we get out of our business, nurturing that relationship. And if you've got the trust of your customers, you can, sometimes you have to push them, sometimes you coerce them, sometimes you persuade them in a more gentle way, but you can get them to try all kinds of things. The bottom line, of course, is that the wine has to be very good. But that's part of the pleasure for us, is to introduce wines to people that they wouldn't have chosen themselves.
Just on that, just before we close up now, what wine would you recommend to someone wanting to try something a wee bit adventurous?
Well, there's any number of exciting things that we love, but one of the particular favourites that we have at the moment is Albarino. The grape varietal Albarino is exactly. It tends to be grown around the Atlantic coast of northern Spain, and it's just a wonderful alternative to things like Sauvignon Blanc and Pinot Grigio. It's a lovely, fresh, crisp style that with lots of flavour and not the kind of wine that knocks you out.
Excellent. Well, thanks very much, Mike, and cheers.
Thank you. Thanks, Chris.
I hope you enjoyed that interview with Mike. I was interested that he didn't import much wine himself, but I suppose it makes sense given that they're trying to get the top wines and they've already got representation in the UK. I was also a bit surprised that they don't have a minimum requirements for people in their stores, such as Wine Spirit Education Trust, WSET. But I suppose if you're a small player, they have time to look at quirky people, and maybe people who don't necessarily fit with the typical mould that you might see in, say, a Majestic store. And also, decisions to hire are really made by Mike and his partner, rather than through some managerial process. The other thing that really surprised me was that guys tend to browse while women go in there with an objective. I suppose I enjoy looking around wine shops and often just pop into the local to have a look, but I'd never really thought about it. It certainly puts a spin on the old adage, you know, the guys like to just go and get the shopping done and the wife likes to browse. We've been running our poll. This week's the last chance to enter the poll, and it was whether should the calories and units of alcohol be splayed on the front of bottles? As I've been saying, I'm a big fan of this. I think it'd be great to know how many calories you're consuming as well as the alcohol units. Hopefully, if you want to get involved in that, just go to our website, ukwineshow.co.uk, and have your say. There's a the poll's on the right-hand side of the screen. Next week, we're going to be talking with Tim Howe, CEO of Majestic. Majestic are the largest wine retail shop in the UK and fit between the supermarket, such as Waitrose, and the small independent merchants, such as Fieldglass and Swigert. So until next week, cheers and good drinking.
The UK Wine Show is a weekly podcast brought to you by 3050, the wine tasting company. The show is produced by Jane Scott, recorded and edited by Chris Scott, and the news is researched by Sandra Clement. To listen to other shows, visit www.ukwineshow.co.uk. Thank you for listening.